Greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. Good to see each one in the house of God. Sunday morning, worshiping God together. One of the adjustments in life that I'm going through is the adjustment from moving from being pastor living in a congregation and basically serving in a congregation and hearing the needs of a congregation to hearing needs from a much broader circle of congregations and even conferences. And sometimes when I think about a message and a burden that's on my heart, I wrestle with this question: is this a burden that this congregation needs, or is this a burden that's unique to me because of hearing things across a much broader spectrum? And sometimes I don't quite know what to do with that. This morning's message is inspired from, not from a particular congregation and needs there, but from a broader sense, even outside of Pilgrim, and thinking about some of the challenges for God's people. It's a subject about married life. And I've chosen somewhat of a strange title, and I'll have to explain it to you. But the title is this. The title is More Than Till Death Do Us Part. More than just the commitment that we have to stay together until we die. Much more than that. There's a story of an older single lady in her 60s. Kind of a difficult lady to relate to in our area. And she was telling someone about an aunt of hers who is getting married in her 60s. And how that getting married in your mid-60s or late-60s is really a good idea. And, well, my mother heard her saying that. And my mother asked her, why? What's the explanation of this exciting thing that the 60s is the time to get married? And she said this. That way, if it's not a go, it doesn't last real long. More than till death do us part. Sad it is if someone finds themselves saying, okay, I'm in this for life, but my, I wanted something different. I wish it were different. Men sometimes joke about marriage being for better or for worse, and sure enough, it was worse. There's an Arabic proverb that says, marriage is like a castle under siege. Those within want to get out, and those without want to get in. Gives you a little picture about sometimes what can be troubled marriage. The burden of this morning's message is that we would be finding rich bonds in marriage beyond the vow. That's not to minimize the vow, and that's not to say, I mean, it is important, we reflect on this sometimes, that this is a commitment for life. But if the commitment and the vow is the only thing that keeps us together, I believe we're living in something less than what God wanted for husbands and wives. Go with me. I'd like to look at a few scriptures first and then look at some bonds that should be part of the marriage relationship. But go with me to Proverbs chapter 21. There's a couple negative verses that I want to look at here. And these verses are aimed at women. But I believe, as I understand human nature, I believe that as men we can fall into the same problem. But I believe the reason they're written about women is the proverb writer was writing to his son to understand life. And that's why it's written the way it is. But I don't think it's strange just to women. I think that men can fall into this. Proverbs 21 verse 9 says, it is better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Brawling means contentious, angry, not easy to get along with. And I believe that I find within myself the ability to be a brawling man. So I think that you could put this on either side of the house. And he's saying it's better to live in a small place than to have a large place and a hurtful relationship. Go with me to verse 19 in this chapter. He says it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. Better to dwell in the wilderness than with someone who is contentious and angry. And again, that could be a lady, that could be a man. Proverbs 27, verse 15. Proverbs 27, verse 15. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. You know what a continual dropping is on a rainy day? When it's not supposed to be dropping. Maybe it's a leak in the roof and you set a bucket underneath it. And here's this drop, drop, drop. Every drop reminds you that something's wrong. Drop, drop. You ever try to sleep with a continual dropping in your bedroom? Drop. Drop, and you keep thinking, now just dismiss it, but it's there. It bugs you. It bugs you. It bugs you. That's the way it is with contentious relationships. It's there. It's there. It's a reminder at various points. And it says that it's like a contentious person, a contentious woman. It's like that dropping, or a contentious man. These verses point to the weariness of discordant relationships, especially marriage relationships where you live with a spouse day in and day out and something's wrong. It's discordant. It's not blending. There's not love and unity. These verses tell us it is much better to have little possessions and happy relationships than the other way around. Now, sometimes what happens to North American Christians is in our pursuit for things, we bind ourselves financially to the point that we become stressed and it hurts our relationships. And the proverb writer says, look, do with less and be happy in your relationships. You're much farther ahead than to have lots and trouble. That's what these scripture verses would teach us. Let's go to a few more scriptures. On the subject of marriage, go to Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 15. I believe he's talking about the marriage relationship, and he says this. Proverbs 5:15, drink waters out of thine own cistern and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and rivers of water in the streets. Let them be only thine own and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. He talks about finding pleasure in our own home. He talks about our marriage being the center of my attraction. And there's this call to rejoice with our spouse all of our days. He says rejoice with the wife of thy youth. And I suppose you could look at that two different ways. When you're young, rejoice having found a wife. But the other way to look at that is keep rejoicing with the one you married like you rejoiced with her when you were young. Rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Even in old age, rejoice. Oh, I know that life brings change and there's things different. But there should be a special preciousness that goes with couples who are committed to one another and to God. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 3, another common passage about marriage relationships. Just like to look at some of these and then talk about some of the practical areas where how to find some bonds in marriage that go beyond that of just a commitment. 1 Peter 3 verses 1 through 7. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorn themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. One of the things that I noticed again this morning, reading through it, as you think about verse 4, in contrast to those first three verses that we read in Proverbs, the Proverbs verses were about contention and brawling spirit, be it a man or a woman, okay? But here in verse 4, now he's talking to the ladies, but this ornament of meekness and a sweet spirit is something that men need to think about and be challenged with as well. This ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, this ornament of cheerfulness and godliness within the heart makes a life beautiful. Well, it says that Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. It speaks something about her giving honor and respect and allegiance, a commitment to him and following his directives. But verse 7 then talks about husbands dwelling with our wives according to knowledge and giving honor to the wife as unto the weaker vessel. So Sarah called Abraham Lord, and that's an example for wives today. And in the next verse, husbands are supposed to give honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel. In other words, she's not made to carry what we're made to carry. And when we shirk our duty and leave it for her to carry, it makes a load that she's not meant to carry. And it says then that we're heirs together of the grace of life. It talks about pleasantness, consideration, respect, reverence for each other. Talks about submitting to each other. Talks about godliness in the heart. All right, let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 3. Another, well, this one starts with the husband, but comes around and addresses the wife as well. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 3. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. This due benevolence, the definition of due benevolence is something like this: a disposition of perpetual kindness. Husbands, we are supposed to have a disposition of perpetual kindness all day, every day, toward our wives. Even when they wreck our automobile, a disposition of kindness. Render to the wife due benevolence, and likewise the wife to her husband, a disposition of perpetual kindness. That's a point that we can all take with us and just keep on working on it tomorrow, the next day. Just a challenge that we need to think about. Test ourselves. Are we kind? Are we rendering due benevolence one to another? Now, I'd like to talk about some bonds in Christian marriage. Bonds other than just the marriage vow. Some things that hold us together. Some cords that wrap around hearts. Married couples' hearts and bind them together. In fact, I think that married couples who are happy in the Lord and one another don't focus very much on the vow, like till death do us part. That's in the background. They're not continually checking and, yeah, that's right. That's there. I have to stay married. I can't divorce. It's kind of like a sideline. It's a significant thing, but it's not in the forefront that's being looked at repeatedly, like, so what does that mean for me today? Okay? Because there's other things that prompt the heart and bind us together. We don't think so much about that. And I like to think about some of those bonds. First of all, first one that I'd like to talk about is the bond of marital love. The intimacies of marriage. And I'd just like to read two passages And let the Bible speak for itself on this subject. Hebrews 13, verse 4. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. And 1 Corinthians 7, verse 4 and 5. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. The bond of marital love. I read somewhere in a book related to this subject, I read this, that marital love is the fire that warms a godly home, and its embers should glow through thick and thin. It's a fire in the center of a godly home that children don't even fully understand, but they see daddy and mommy love one another, and they feel that warmth. In fact, that fire example is a good example, because at times people try to play with that fire outside of the marriage relationship, and it burns and destroys. But within the bonds of holy matrimony, that fire warms the home, warms the relationship, and makes a bond that pulls together and helps inspire each other to be faithful. It's a love that seeks the other's good first. It's a love that loves to give and give and give. It's a love that will not use and abuse their spouse. It's a love that accepts the humanity of our spouse. I told someone in the workplace this week that, look, you're allowed to be human at this place. We will address needs of humanity, but you're allowed to be human. If you make a mistake, that's permissible, because we're all human, okay? If, you know, depending what it is, we're going to encourage you not to make it again. And that's the way it is in marriage. We must have a love for one another that accepts a humanity. We didn't marry an angel, okay? We thought we were marrying an angel, but you know what? We married a human. And we must be committed to love when we see each other's humanity. It's a love that seeks to understand each other's heart. In fact, it's a love that seeks more to understand than to be understood. That's a little complex. But it's a love that says, I want to understand and serve you more than it says you need to understand and serve me. Bond of marital love. The second bond, and I don't have these in necessarily order of importance or order in which we meet them as we marry and go through life, but just some of the things that I thought about. This second bond is the bond of provisions. A husband earns a living and provides for the home. And that should be appreciated by the wife. This provision, she's not alone in life and left to make it herself. And then a wife takes her place in the home, and she makes meals and does laundry. And I hear sometimes young men or older young men find themselves occasionally in life where they have to do their own laundry. At Bible school, I've been there to teach already and had to help manage the boys' dorm and the laundry subject for them doing their laundry. And it's a mess. They don't know what they're doing. And they don't like to do it, and they'll let it. And they won't fold it, and they won't. Because we're used to letting mom do that, okay? We're used to going out and pounding nails and fixing mechanical problems and so glad to have women to take care of home duties. The bond of provision. So a husband to take care of the car and of the leaking roof. But then a wife to iron his clothes and fold his handkerchiefs. I can iron a shirt if I have to. I like an iron shirt, but ironing is frustrating. In fact, I'll just be honest with you. Before I'll pick up the iron at times, if it's cold weather, I'll put a wrinkly shirt on and put my suit coat on top of it, and you won't know it wasn't iron because because by the time I take my suit coat off, it'll be wrinkled anyhow. That's how a man looks at ironing, okay? That's how this man looks at ironing. And so, I can go off to work and I can endure some difficulties and some frustrating days because that's my life and that's my part of provisions. And I'm so grateful for a wife to take care of some of those provisions. It's a bond of provisions. And sometimes, men, we forget the provisions that our wives are providing for us. And maybe as ladies, you forget what your husband is providing as well. And when it is this way, when the bond of provisions is pulling us together, then common daily tasks become a rich part of marriage when we do them for the one we love. So then ironing is a joy if you're ironing the shirt for your lover. And pounding nails is a joy if you're doing it for your lover. The bond of provisions. I believe that part of this, when I think about provisions and, you know, I think about a bank account, I think that as godly marriages, godly homes, we should have a common bank account. We should have shared income. We should work together as husbands and wives to a mutual effort to save and together in investments. I heard a husband say not so long ago that his wife doesn't have anything in his credit cards and what he owes the tool man, and he takes care of all his expenditures. He has his checkbook and she has hers. And I don't know what all is there, but I can sense it's not the bond that it should be. I don't know how, maybe there's other kinds of troubles. I don't know. Maybe she spends too. I don't know. It's not one from our churches that I feel like I need to pastor them to help them. But I wish I could make a difference, and I pray for them. Because there's a little picture of need there, I think, as you watch that working. So the bond of provisions. Number three is the bond of protection. Protection. A husband to answer the door at night, to be there in a storm, or to take a sick child to the hospital. You know, it's amazing to me. I was already in a situation at school before the school year started. A couple of us were working at school. There was two of the sister teachers and a relative or two of them helping, but it was ladies. So there was three or four ladies there, and I was there. I was the only man there, and I was working in my room, and a storm came through. In fact, a storm that had a little twister had touched down back at Indiantown Gap, and so there was this warning for a tornado warning, and Jonestown School sits on top of a hill, and we have no basement, just concrete slabs. Where do you go to get away from a tornado? And this storm was brewing, and then Darvin Weaver called me and said, "Hey, you all need to get out of that building and get down here, because this is bad." He said, "I'm looking out here in the cornfield, the corn's swirling, and so I began closing windows, and I was scared, okay? But the ladies in there were not scared because I was there. How many times are men scared? I was scared in that storm, and I didn't admit it in the middle of it. Partway through, we couldn't get out of the building because the storm was upon us. And partway through there, the attic door from upstairs blew open and hot air came down. I thought we lost the roof. And the ladies had no clue that I was scared. I just swallowed it. And I closed windows, and we stood in the hallway kind of like, what do we do from here? I was going to bolt and get in my car until I realized there's ladies here. And I was like, no, I can't bolt and get in my car. I got to stay here. And later I admitted that I was scared. And they're like, well, why didn't you tell us? I said, well, would that help? Would I complicated it? But you see what happens oftentimes, even in home life, if dad is there, even if dad's uncomfortable about what's going on, at least dad's there. Okay, if the roof comes off, dad will have some direction. Dad can't stop the storm. The husband can't stop the storm. But there's something that ladies find security in, that a man is present. So there's this bond of protection. There's also then on the wife's side, a wife to protect her husband. To be an encourager to him when he is down. There's a tremendous impact, wives, that you have on your husband when you believe in your husband, even when he's going through tough times. tough times financially or business-wise or on the farm, something's not quite working out, all you need to do, if you want to really crush him, is be ready him that you knew better and you figured it wouldn't go there, and it really hurt him, okay? And so there's some protection that you can protect him with your confidence in him and your commitment to him. This is true also, you are his protector and his moral integrity. 1 Corinthians 7 verse 1 says, "Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband." That speaks about the protection of the marriage bond to protect one another in our moral journeys. I believe that part of this point of protection is protection through our failures. Not exploiting our spouse's shortcomings. Brother Furl Good told us a story the other night at Winter Bible School of something that happened that he did, a foolish thing that he did, and his wife had some idea that it wasn't going to work. And he said this, his wife won't tell the story. He told the story, okay? And there's a temptation for us to tell the story on our spouse. There's a temptation for us to laugh at the ridiculousness of it. Because men, you and I must be honest that when a lady makes a mistake, it often looks ridiculous to us. And ladies, you got to be honest. Some of us men, when we make mistakes, it looks so ridiculous. Okay? It's a man problem. It's a lady problem. And back and forth. I was teaching my daughter the other day, learning to drive. I was teaching her not to hold the steering wheel all the way against that makes the power steering pump squeal. Because where I work, there's a few men who can recognize that in the parking lot, and they'll make this comment. There's a lady turning around out there because they hold that thing up tight against, just back off a little bit, okay? Those kinds of things we are in tune to in various ways. But as husbands and wives, we are one another's protector. And I should not tell you a joke on my wife where she did something foolish in driving or whatever. And you get the point. Protection in our... marriage should be a safe place to grow up into the image of Jesus Christ. Helping one another to grow up. It should be a safe place to grow up. And I believe that home life should be that even for the children. I don't think parents should exploit the children's problems. There should be this is a safe place for us. No, not to just excuse things less than the best, but to grow up together. And I believe that God gives couples, children, to finish growing up the couple. In a lot of ways, that really happens. Well, go with me to Luke chapter 7. There's a scriptural point here related to forgiveness that I think we should think about in the marriage relationship. It's true in the church relations. I believe it can be applied in many different relationships. But Luke chapter 7, verse 40, Jesus is talking to this man, Simon. And Simon was critical of this woman who was putting this ointment on Jesus' feet, this alabaster box. And Jesus told this story to Simon about this man that had two debtors. The one owed a big sum, the other a little sum. And the man forgave both of them. And then he says, which one will love him more? The one with the little debt forgiven or the one with the large debt forgiven? And Simon answered right. He said, the one that forgave the large debt. The principle is that love is increased when large forgiveness is extended. Okay? So if someone crosses my path, something in me, though, says I need to make him pay for that. I don't want him to do this again. He's got to learn. The principle is love him and forgive him, and he will love you. And that works in the marriage relationship. So if the wife fails to iron his shirt, and he needs to go away or whatever it is, it's a temptation for us husbands to growl and tell him, listen, this didn't happen again. And a wife needs to learn to do her part and love. But the better approach is a loving forgiveness. And when they're forgiven, they will love because you were tender and kind and forgave. And there's a bond there that happens. The bond of protection. So let's go on to number four, the bond of companionship. Companionship, someone to share life with, someone to talk to on good days and bad days, someone you can lay your heart wide open to. The bond of companionship. There's this idea of understanding each other and mutual trust in one another. I believe that the closest person on earth to us should be our spouse. We can talk to, we can share, and we can, you know, the frustrations, or sometimes there's things in life that, may I say it this way, sometimes there's things in life that I am thinking wrong, and I have a wrong attitude. I need someone that I can rattle to, who can help me sort out where this is, and where I am, and how to go through this, and what we should do with it, and we should be able to do that for one another, to be able to listen to one another and help sort through those feelings. And help. Sometimes, though, just having been able to talk about it, we can think straighter about it and more correctly just because someone listened. They might not even have much to say about what you should do with it. But having gotten it off our chest to someone we trust, suddenly we can start to sort through and say, you know what, this is a bad attitude, this is a truth. This we shouldn't do, this we should do, and we can find our way in a better sense. A bond of companionship. I believe that part of this is the pursuit of life together. The pursuit of life together. Now, often for married couples, usually it means a family of children and challenges. The pursuit of raising a family, children for God. It's a tremendous joy of family life and children growing up and memories made. And, well, you know, we could spend all morning talking about the joy of family life. But this bond of companionship, part of this is this pursuit of life, that we are pursuing a life together. It is us, not me, us. It is we. Okay, it might also involve a business or a farm. There's some tremendous bonding that happens when families work together to accomplish making a living. And children can learn some traits. Now, in our world today, most times industrial type of jobs, children can't hardly be involved in. And even farm jobs, you have to be careful because accidents happen. It's difficult sometimes to do that. But there's something tremendous about the pursuit of life as a family. This might even be the calling to the ministry. Pulling together to accomplish what God called us to in the church. The pursuit of life together. That as a couple, we can do this by God's grace. As a family, we can find ways to do this and have God's blessing on it. The bond of companionship. We sing the song, Precious Memories, How They Linger. And you think about the precious memories that linger in our minds. And you listen to older folks talking about their precious memories. I want to tell you what they're going to tell you about. They're going to tell you about good times together with the family and friends. That's what they're going to tell you about. Church family, church friends, family and friends, grandchildren. We know that, okay? That's not a subject that we would disagree on. The bond of companionship. What does it mean to have lots of friends? What does it mean to have a loving family that goes from one generation to the next generation and they're all appreciative of one another? The pursuit of life together, this bond of companionship. It is wrong, it's a wrong concept for a husband to desire to spend time hanging out at a hay auction or a cattle auction. He'd rather be there than to be at the house. Now, he probably has to be there sometimes depending on his work and his farm and things, so he will need to go to the hay auction. But something within him should be like pulling him home. How soon can I get done? Get there and get in line, get an earlier number so I don't have to spend the whole day there. That type of thing should be going on. It's wrong for a wife to want to hang out with her lady friends rather than be there with her spouse. Yes, she'll have things that she does with the ladies, but there should be something kind of beckoning her
back to her spouse. Bond of companionship. Number five is the bond of fruitfulness. Fruitfulness. A life of usefulness. One of the things that human hearts desire, one of the things that makes us, may I say, makes us feel good? That almost sounds carnal, but gives us satisfaction in life, gives us something to live for, is to be useful. To do something for God and His kingdom and for others. One of the greatest ways to overcome dark days and depression is go do something kind for somebody else. Reach out and bless someone else. And it does something within our hearts that we can't do by just sitting at our house trying to get over it. Sometimes you go visit an older couple, someone in an old people's home, and you do it to cheer them up, and you discover that maybe you got more cheer than you think you left with them. That's how that works. Bond of fruitfulness, a life of usefulness, reaching out. The idea of resourcefulness, being a blessing to others. So men, where would we be in family life without our wives? How fruitful would be, how much would we be able to reach out and bless others? What would we be doing if it was all up to us? Even the subject of inviting folks over to the house. So maybe even, okay, let's say the minister and his efforts to reach out and build relationships with the families in the congregation. He depends on a wife to make some meals. And you know what? It's probably happened where something was going on and a husband said, yeah, come on over to our house. And then you quickly, you know, honey, is there something we can make? Some popcorn or something that this family's coming through? And I invited them over. And I think we should make plans as far ahead as we can. But sometimes that happens on the spur of the moment. And the wife jumps to it and says, sure, we can do this and we can do that. And there's this fruitfulness. There's this being able to accomplish it. One of the things that frustrates me really, really bad in life, if my wife is laid up or not able to serve in the house, it takes me forever to get ready to go to church or to get up, get breakfast and do those kind of things. I don't understand it. I can't hardly pull it off. Try to get the family around, the children. Okay, there's this bond of fruitfulness that together we can do more and we can reach out and we realize some impact on our life. We realize that we are blessed to be able to serve in this way because there's togetherness. We're doing this. It's a project together. It's fruitful because we're pulling together. So, man, what impact has your wife had on your business or your farm? You should think through that. Maybe it's little. And I'm not saying that ladies should. How much you should be involved in those things. But there's this mutual pulling together to make it happen. And sometimes as men, we think it's all our doing. But take the wife out of the situation and it might grind much harder than it does. I'm sure it will. And so part of looking at these bonds is to kind of open up our eyes to what all our spouse is doing for us and how much impact we have on each other and to be appreciative of that. So the bond of fruitfulness should be something that we appreciate because we're able to do, we're able to serve, we're able to reach out, we're able to bless others. And even the reality, is it carnal for a father to feel a blessing in his soul to see his sons blessing the church by leading, singing, and serving? And then is it carnal for a grandfather or a great-grandfather to be blessed looking at the generations taking up the work of God? That's not carnal. Now, we need to be careful. You can focus on that too much, and that can become a problem. But, you know, there's fathers and grandfathers today that are sending their sons and grandsons out into the world and out to be doctors and lawyers and pursue the high wage and all that. And that's carnal. And so the bond of fruitfulness, realizing that because as husband and wife we were faithful and God blessed our home and now our children can help to serve in God's kingdom and eventually their children can serve in God's kingdom. It's not wrong to feel that blessing in our heart. Let's not be lifted up in pride over it, but it's not wrong to continue to pursue helping the rising generations to be part of God's kingdom and to find the joy of togetherness. Something being destroyed in America today. In fact, you need to listen to Wednesday night's message. Wednesday night's message by Brother Elvin will talk about many of those things being destroyed. It's a tremendously powerful message about where America is today and where we are as God, the things we're facing as God's people. Something happening in America today that is destroying the foundations of the church and of the nation. And that foundation, one of those foundations, is the home. Well, number six is the bond of joy. The bond of joy. Sharing happy times together. Experiencing the grace of God together. Taking time to do things together that we enjoy. And it might be trips, and it might be gardening, it might be bird watching, it might be, it varies with families and what they enjoy. But the bond of joy, every time you make occasion where as a family, as a couple, as a family, you can do something that you all enjoy. And it might just be popcorn around the fireplace on a snowy winter night. Every time we make one of those occasions, there's something happens that says it's wonderful to be part of this circle. It does. And every time that we neglect that, or every time that we break that and say something else is more valuable to me than that, it has a pulling apart effect. So what makes our spouse happy? Or what makes them extra happy? Man, you should know what makes your wife smile. Might be something you bring home. It might be a certain kind of candy bar that your wife really likes. And you know when you bring that home, you get that extra smile. Aha, you know what I like. Ladies, you might know what your husband likes in his lunch or for supper. And you make that and you get that knowing smile that, aha, I see what you did. Okay? What makes our spouse happy? We need to understand that. And then we need to listen and watch for those things. We can be so busy in life that we forget that. Forget to even catch those little things. Those little hints of what they really like. Then as we understand that, then make plans and do more of that. Okay? Make it happen. Might be a dozen roses. It might be whatever. Make it happen. The bond of joy. I like to say it this way, husbands and wives, we ought to make it a point to spoil our spouses. Now that sounds bad, but if the husband is out to spoil his wife and the wife is out to spoil her husband, no one will get spoiled. It'll be a beautiful relationship. Where the spoiling comes is if this thing gets lopsided and it's all give and no get, and it's one side, then we run into problems. But husbands, just go ahead and try it. If it doesn't work, let me know. Go ahead and try to spoil your wife. And wives, try to spoil your husband. And let me know if it makes casualty, because I don't think it will. Well, number seven, last one, is the bond of spiritual experience and power. Jesus said that where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. If two or three agree on something, there's some special presence of God. And I just like to think about a couple agreeing, a couple worshiping God, a family, two or three, turning to God, saying, God, we need you. Through prayer, through family worship, in whatever situation, this bond of spiritual experience and power. Couples should know something about this. Couples should know something about answered prayer, that together there was a need, and together we looked at it and we said, we need to pray to God about this, and then God answered. And the tremendous reality that my wife and I labor together with God on this subject. And it's not carnal to find a blessing in laboring together with God and experiencing God's presence in answering needs and helping and making a difference in lives. It might be a neighbor family. It might be needs in our own children, grandchildren, wherever. But the bond of spiritual experience and power. Sensing God's presence through tests. Experiencing God's direction and leading. And the reality that God is with us as a couple, as a family. God is here and God has a place for us in his kingdom. And we have a place in God's kingdom. Blessings from personal devotions, family worship, closeness in spiritual warfare, interceding for our families and the things that they face as they go out in the world around. In closing, I'd like to ask three questions. We looked at these bonds. And there's probably others that we didn't look at, but we'll let that suffice. But the first question is, what am I doing to add to these bonds? What am I doing to add to them? It's well worth the effort to add to those bonds. In fact, sometimes in life, when couples are struggling, it's not going so well, at least one of the spouses, maybe both of them, start to wrestle with this far off question in the mind, but it comes too close. They wrestle with this question, he won't leave me, will he? She won't leave me, will she? That should be far from us. But sometimes when it's difficult, there's this cold question. Listen, one of the ways to see to it that he can't leave you, sisters, or one of the ways to see to it that she can't leave you, brethren, is wrap those bonds around and around and around and around and around. Those bonds that we talked about. Don't just depend on the marriage vow, but get active and busy to wrap as many bonds around as you can. And you know what? They can't leave because there's that love. In fact, the Bible says that when you have this fragmented relationship, you have a man who's not faithful. There's some special power. If the wife will stay close and bless him, there's special spiritual power that actually can help to win him back. And I want to tell you something, sisters. If there is power to win a man back from the gutter, there is power, the same power, to keep the man won to your heart. Don't forget that. So what am I doing to add to these bonds? Number two, do I express appreciation enough for my spouse? We shouldn't wait till they're gone to notice what they did for us. Sometimes, though, as men, we need a situation where, well, we had a situation a year or so ago where a child was in the hospital with appendicitis and spent a couple days there, and mom spent some days in the hospital, and dad discovered what all mom does, okay? We need some of those occasionally to kind of like jerk us around to remember, you know what? She's doing a lot, and I'm kind of just assuming that that's what she's supposed to do, and I'm not as thankful as I should be for it. So do I express enough for my spouse? And that can go both ways. And number three question, am I truly giving enough to bless my spouse? Am I truly giving enough? The challenge of laying down selfishness, the challenge of, yeah, just going ahead and doing everything I can to bless my spouse. And God will bless our relationship, our homes, our marriages. And we can have bonds of matrimony that were held together by more than just till death do us part. Shall we kneel for prayer?